Today we're reading from the glorious Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 3rd chapter entitled The Birth of Lord Krishna, text 30, translation by Srila Prabhupada. O my Lord, you are the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead, and your transcendental four-armed form, holding conch shell, disc, club, and lotus, is unnatural for this world. Please withdraw this form and become just like a natural human child so that I may try to hide you somewhere. Please repeat after me. O my Lord. You are the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead.
You are the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead.
And your transcendental
four-armed form
holding conch shell,
disc,
club, and lotus is unnatural for this world.
Please withdraw this form
and become just like a natural human child so that I may try to hide you somewhere. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Devaki was thinking of hiding the Supreme Personality of Godhead and not handing him over to Kamsa, as she had all her previous children. Although Vasudeva had promised to hand over every child to Kamsa, this time he wanted to break his promise and hide the child somewhere. But because of the Lord's appearance in his surprising four-armed form, he would be impossible to hide. I was born into the darkest of ignorance with my spiritual master. My eyes were touched out of knowledge. I offered my respectful obeisances unto him. So in this verse and purport, we find out that Vasudeva, who had strictly promised to Kamsa that he would hand over every one of his children, is about to break his promise, despite the fact that Vasudeva was famous for keeping his word. In fact, it was because of his fame for keeping his promises that Kamsa agreed not to kill Devaki. So generally, one should not break laws, like promises, unless there is very special reasons, that the exception to the rule actually has to be exceptional, right? If somebody comes to your house and he tries to kill you, then you can kill them. Murder is against the law, but in self-defense, you can kill somebody. Now, if somebody just parks their car in front of your driveway and you decide to kill them because they obstructed your road, that wouldn't be accepted in the court of law. But if there's an exceptional circumstance, it has to be exceptional. If it's not exceptional, according to Mimamsa, the Purva Mimamsa, unless the exception is truly exceptional, then it does damage to the law itself. So, for example, we've taken vows that we should not eat meat. But there are exceptional circumstances. Manu says that if you are forced to miss six meals, then you can eat anything. Anything, because you have to survive. Survival is required. Then if you didn't eat anything, if there's food available and you neglected to eat it, then you would be guilty of suicide. So there's exceptions. Or in the case of Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira he was very attached. He was known as Dharmaputra, Dharmaraj. And he always kept his word. He never lied. Not even in joking. It was stated. They didn't even lie even in joking. He knew what was right and he did what was right. So, when Krishna told him to lie, in the case of saying that Ashwatthama had been killed, to Drona, in other words, lying to his own guru, he didn't want to do it. But this was wrong on his case, because there was an extraordinary circumstance. He's being directly ordered by Krishna. Dharman tu shakshat bhagavat pranitam. The one who makes the rules is telling him what to do, to break them, to break this rule. And he refused when he should have listened. And because of that, Krishna gave him a slight slap on the wrist, and he had to see Naraka because of this. A minor infringement. Bhima was, of course, all too willing to break any and every rule, being his nature. So he killed an elephant named Ashwatthama, like that. In many cases, for example, in the case of Duryodhan, that it was illegal to strike anyone below the waist, but Krishna ordered Bhima to strike Duryodhan below the waist because that was the only part he was vulnerable. So this is one point in this text, that we should only break laws if there are exceptional circumstances. So some examples where people didn't break the rule when it was exceptional, and there are other cases where people, unfortunately, even in ISKCON, sometimes we will be willing to break rules which should not be broken because there are no exceptional circumstances. So this is one point. Another point in this verse, and of course through the whole chapter, is about the form of Krishna. If we listen to lectures by Srila Prabhupada stresses on a few basic points all through his lectures. Because we students were so dull, the points had to be repeated over and over again. One of the points being, of course, that we're not our body. And the other point Prabhupada always stressed is that Krishna is a person. God is a person. He has a form. Now to us, because we've been inculcated and we've been reading Srila Prabhupada's books, this is like second hand. We don't even think twice. Of course, God must have a form, isn't it? Nobody ever, we don't think otherwise. Why is Prabhupada stressing? It's because there are many people who don't accept that God has a form. Direct atheists, they just reject God altogether. Form, unformed, whichever way, which way, they don't accept God at all. But then there are the subtle, hidden atheists who, they don't directly, they're not gentlemen like Prabhupada says, the Buddhists and the outright atheists, at least they're gentlemen, they're directly in your face and they say there's no God. But others, Mayavadis, impersonalists, oh yes, there's God, but he has no limbs, no face, no nothing. He's just neti-neti, he's just this nothing. So it's an indirect way of saying that there's no God. But this is one of the reasons that Srila Prabhupada always emphasized this point. In fact, he even wrote a book just to push the point. It's called Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. With emphasis on the word personality. Prabhupada always mentioned this word, personality of Godhead. So, our mission, one of his missions was, what? Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, to destroy this concept of impersonalism and voidness, the Buddhist and the impersonalist. That the Buddhists say it's a void, Shunyavad, it means void, and then Nirvishesha, no differentiation, no pastimes. If there's no form, how can there possibly be any relationship or pastimes? So Srila Prabhupada hammered away constantly. If you listen to any of Srila Prabhupada's lectures, you know, there are just a few basic points that he continuously hammered away at, just to drive the point home, because it needs to be driven home. Because the world around us is like that. Sometimes people say, well, why Srila Prabhupada would discuss about sex? Why the Shastras discuss about sex? Well, there has to be some counter-propaganda, because if you just look outside, it's just like all over the place. So there's some counter-propaganda has to be done. So there's a lot, most of the world is, for example, Islam doesn't accept the form of God. Then, you know, you say there's a form, that's grounds for being executed. They'll kill you if you say there's a form. Or in Judaism, a lot of sections of Judaism, they don't accept there's a form of God. We're to speak of Islam, New Age, Sufis, there's no form of God. So this is our mission. To understand what our mission is, we have to, we're of course trying to execute Srila Prabhupada's mission. But we sometimes have a bit of a fuzzy notion of what that mission might be. So to really understand what Srila Prabhupada's mission is, we have to know what the person who sent him and what his mission was, what his desire was. Bhakti Siddhanta, he's the one who sent Srila Prabhupada to the West. So he had a mission to fulfill, and Srila Prabhupada was trying to fulfill it. So if we know what the mission of Bhakti Siddhanta is, then we'll know what Prabhupada was trying to do. Then we'll know what we're supposed to be doing. And fortunately, in the extremely near future, within the next few days, actually, that Bhakti Vikasa's book, Monumental Thesis, in three volumes, 1,500 pages, on the life of Bhakti Siddhanta will be coming from the printers. In fact, he might even have a few copies with him when he comes to. He's coming this afternoon or something. Yeah. So, line up and get one. Then you will know what was the mission of Bhakti Siddhanta, who sent Prabhupada to fulfill his directions. You'll get a much clearer idea of what we are supposed to be doing. Recently in England, I read about it, that there was a bus campaign by the local chapter of atheists, wasn't there? Mm-hmm. They were promoting atheists. They weren't even sure. They were not even definite. I think they said probably. They're not even sure if there's God. They were just probably he's not there. that's the way it was. Yeah. So, they were pushing this idea. And then I was reading about what's the name of that gentleman? Who wrote The God Delusion?
Dawkins.
Yeah, somebody wrote a book, The Dawkins Delusion. the delusion. Because they pointed out that these atheists, these persons like Dawkins, they put forward straw man arguments. Straw man argument is you see, unlike, say, when Madhvacharya or in Vedanta philosophy, when you go to debate with somebody, first of all, you learn the other person's point of view very well, and you present it completely, exactly what their Siddhanta is, and then you defeat it. But they were pointing out that these people like Dawkins, they don't even present the actual viewpoint of people who believe in God. They present all kinds of weird ideas, and then they defeat those ideas, which are not even our propositions. And then they say they've defeated the concept of God. I don't remember all of them, but I remember one point that they were saying it because, like Venerable Prabhupada says, that the whole universe is working precisely. This indicates that there must be a designer, creation by design, the watchmaker. Well, there's So one gentleman said, this idea by a creation by design, you know, the design theory, is flawed. It's not true. It doesn't work. Why is that? What's their reason? They say that because, well, you just look at the world. There's so many problems. People have, you know, somebody's born with congenital diseases and difficulties. There's hurricanes. There's heat waves. There's no designer. Why, if God is perfect, then the creation, his creation should also be perfect, right? So therefore there's no God. Because the creation is imperfect. So what's the answer to this point? What is the answer to this point? The world... Okay, he has an answer. Go ahead.
It is perfect.
Yes, it's perfectly imperfect by design. It's done on purpose. It's not by accident. It's not because there's nobody at the wheel that there's these problems. No, it's done on purpose. Krishna says, he himself says, it's dukkalayam shashvatam. He has purposely designed this world to be this way. Just like the government, when they create a prison, they don't make it out to be a health spa. They make it out to be a very uncomfortable place. Of course, European prisons, I mean, there's a relativity here. I was just reading how recently there's some Somali, you know, there's in Somalia, there were these pirates, right? So a bunch of them were captured, and they were sent to Nederland, and they were in a Dutch prison. They liked it so much that they requested political asylum so they could stay in jail, because the jails in Nederland were much nicer living free in Somalia. So there's a relative conception here, you know, but to somebody living in Netherlands, he might not like the Dutch jails. But some other people might think it's a luxury hotel. So the point being is that the government designs prisons so that the citizens don't enjoy them on purpose. It's not like an accident. So the world it's not accidentally that things are going wrong, that there's wars, that there's disease, that there's disharmony, because this is the nature of the world on purpose. That's why Krishna says that when a person achieves liberation and goes back to Godhead, he never returns, because he knows how terrible this place is. That Manu says the same thing. Manu says that when a person perfects his brahminical culture, then he's able to see all his previous births, all of them. That means that's a lot of births. As we're talking about these zillions of births, he's able to see all of them, and he makes them totally disgusted, and they never want to return, because that's why it's perfectly imperfect. It's so imperfect that we don't want to come back. So this is an example of the type of faulty logic used by the atheists in order to counteract the conception of God, or to speak of the form of God. So our business is to promote Krishna consciousness, to promote Krishna as a person, the Supreme Personality of God. And this way, by understanding the personality of God, we can consider different relationships that we can have with God. And not only is it that Krishna has a form, but as Mother Devaki is saying, he's got a supernatural form, not as alokika, not as seen naturally in the world. So Krishna is such an unusual person. I'm sure if any lady gave birth to a child with four arms, with weapons on them, that this would be in the front pages of the newspapers, right? Not just in the National Enquirer or whatever. This is part of Krishna's lila. Krishna does these things in order to attract the living entity to his pastimes. Because Krishna didn't have to go to all these different troubles to get rid of demons. It's like when Krishna came in the form of Ram, he killed Ravana. The whole thing, 24,000 verses, the whole Ramayana, in order to kill Ravana. But he didn't have to go through all of those troubles. He didn't have to go to live 14 years in the forest. He could have just, you know, Ravana could have had a heart attack, and that's it. But it would be the world's smallest Ramayana. It would be, you know, not very exciting. Nobody would be interested. No attraction, no interaction with devotees. So the whole purpose of Krishna's various leelas is to fascinate the mind. He's called the supreme actor, drama. People go to the movies, they go to the plays because they want to leave, they want to escape from their mundane life. There's so many forms of escapism. The There are some very, like escapism, like drugs, or different various types of intoxication, because people feel pain in this world. They're feeling pain. So to eliminate that pain, they take these drugs, and at least for some moments of time, they're forgetful, all in pain. But there's people who may not take such drastic methods, but they'll watch television, just blot out their own mind and absorb themselves in somebody else's life, however nonsensical it may be, or some movie. Or they could go to some people get attracted to food. Food is their comfort food. So rather than just, they're trying to escape from the pain of life, and this actually is normal because it is a painful place, but their method is escapism. Why is it called escapism? Because it's like a fire exit, which is a rotating door. It just puts you back into the building that is burning on fire, because it doesn't solve anything. True escape is to establish our relationship with Krishna. So by becoming absorbed in Krishna's pastimes, then we can develop our relationship with Him. So part of our mission, actually a large part of our mission, as Srila Prabhupada said, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, is to bring people to Krishna consciousness, to understand the personality and form of Krishna. So this can be done in five ways. Five things are necessary to do this. First of all, we each individually have to be totally convinced of this philosophy that Krishna is a person, He has a form, a transcendental form. That's the first thing. That we do that by reading Srila Prabhupada's books, all the sadhana, etc. Then we have to distribute books, lots of books. That gives people knowledge of the subject. Then we also have to distribute prasadam, and as well as the holy name. By distributing prasadam, this gives people brain substance to understand what's in the books. The books, a lot of people get books. I remember when I first got Srila Prabhupada's books, I had to reread each paragraph about five times, and it still didn't quite sink in. Over, and I was studying pure mathematics, and I still had a difficult time to read Prabhupada's books. So prasadam gives people the intelligence, and also we have to distribute not just the books and prasadam, we also have to distribute the holy name by Harinam, Sankirtan. This also gives people, it clears the mind, purifies the soul, gives the ability to understand the books. That was one thing I understood when I was first became a devotee, that I was trying to follow the instructions in the books, and one of them is to chant. So it's like what's that word? I can't think of it right now, but it's chanting, it gives us the intelligence to be able to understand what's in the books, and by reading the books, it gives us the motivation to chant. To do service. So it's a mutually beneficial system. The word just escapes me right now. And the fifth thing which we have to do is continue this beautiful deity worship that we see here. All glories to the pujaris, because then we can see the form of Krishna. We can see how beautiful Krishna is in his variegated forms, in his nice dresses, then we'll be able to appreciate. Let's say Prabhupada said that our system is a combination of Bhagavat Marga and Pancharatrika Marga. By deity worship, by engaging in the various forms of devotional service, this brings us to the platform of Bhagavat Marga. In fact, Srila Prabhupada said that Pancharatrika, the Pancharatra, is even more important than Vedanta. So, any questions or comments?
I was confused about the last point. Pancharatra is
Srila Prabhupada said Pancharatra, which involves deity worship, all the different methodologies of performing devotional service. Prabhupada said that Pancharatra is more important than Vedanta. There are many quotations, many. If you look in the Veda base, there are hundreds of hits on Pancharatra. It gives all the rules and regulations for how to live. You know, for example, there is some debate about. Some people say, "Well, Prabhupada, there's the word sari and dhoti is not found, are not found in the Sanskrit dictionary." Like Manya Williams Sanskrit dictionary doesn't have the word sari and dhoti. Therefore, some people are saying, "Well, we don't have to wear saris and dhotis." You may have heard of this. They're pushing it because they have their own motivation. They feel uncomfortable or embarrassed wearing saris and dhotis. But this can be looked at in several ways. First of all, Srila Prabhupada is translating from one language into another language. Translation means to bring the unknown to the known. Right? From an unknown word into a known word. So there are many words which are not found in Sanskrit. The word house is not found in Sanskrit. So Prabhupada translates a Sanskrit word and he points to the word house. And therefore we know there's a connection there. So in the vernacular languages, sari and dhoti is what people call this kind of cloth. So Prabhupada translates the Sanskrit terms as sari and dhoti. That's what we know. It's a vernacular term. And of course, Srila Prabhupada was asked many times if he's seen Krishna. And he said yes, on a daily basis. He sees Krishna. He sees what Krishna is dressed in. And he says, that's a dhoti. So, when Srila Prabhupada sees it, and to him it looks like a dhoti, it's a dhoti. You bring your kid to the park, you point, that's a duck. Then the kid knows that's a duck. So, Srila Prabhupada is pointing, he sees, this is what Krishna wears, he wears a dhoti. But it's very clear in Pancharatra that you cannot worship the deities wearing sewn cloth. You can't wear sewn cloth on the altar. In fact, what to speak of on the altar, you're not even supposed to go in front of the altar in sewn cloth. There are many temples, specifically in South India, they would not allow you into the temple if you wore a kurta. You have to take your kurta off. To wear angavastra. Like that. Or there's a movie, a television series called Chanakya, about 47 episodes. But the interesting thing about it is that through the whole movie, the whole series, no one, male, female, man, woman, child, whatever varna, none of them are wearing sewn cloth. And this takes place in Takshashila, which is almost in Afghanistan, not exactly a hot country in the wintertime. It's cold, snow. No one was wearing sewn cloth. Because that's the Vedic standard. That's Pancharatra. So there are many different rules like this, meant to bring a person into sattva guna, so that they can nicely interact. Because a bridge between varna ashram, to become a human being, one has to follow varna ashram. And then higher than that, because for example, we were not born in varna ashram. But by Pancharatrika Marg, we were initiated in Vaishnavism. Even somebody may be a Brahmin, according to Varna Ashram, you're not going to let them go on the altar and worship. It's because somebody's got a Brahmin initiation. Some people think, because they're Brahmins, they can worship. No. There are plenty of Brahmins who are not, you wouldn't let them on the altar. Even they may be duly initiated because they're not Vaishnavas. To become a Vaishnava, you have to have Pancharatrik Diksha, which is called Pancha Samskara. Five Samskara. That makes you a Vaishnava. That's eligible. Like in Varnashram, is based upon the. It's material. It's all material based upon your trigunas. To be a Brahmin is that only males who are in sattva guna, who are doing the work, are considered brahmins. It's all a material designation. So it's a kind of it's a misnomer to say a woman, because she got second initiation, is a brahmin. It's not a fact. She got second initiation. Then Bhakti Siddhanta, after the second initiation, gave brahmin diksha. What happened was that in many sampradayas, they give the pancha samskar all at once. The pancha samskar are Urdhva Pundra, Tapan, Dasya Nam, Yaga, and Mantra. So, I don't know why, but in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, Urdhva Pundra is Tilak. Actually, until, technically speaking, you're not supposed to wear Tilak until the time of initiation. But, I don't know why, but not just in ISKCON, but in Gaudiya, they wear Tilak. But that's only supposed to be done at the time of the initiation, because it's part of the initiation ceremony. Then there's tapan. Tapan means you're marked. In other sampradayas, they mark you with hot brands. Hot brands are the symbols of Vishnu. Chanka, chanka. For us, we wear these beads around our neck. Like if you see a cow that's been branded, you know it belongs to somebody. Similarly, if you see a goat, goats also in India, but dogs in England, a dog without a collar has got no master. But a dog with a collar belongs to somebody. Right? And then there's Dasya Nam. You're given the name, you know, like associated with Krishna, but with the end Dasa. Now, Dasa does not mean servant. Dasa means slave. Hanuman once said that, "I'm not the servant of Ram. A servant, at the end of his duties, can do whatever he likes. I am the slave of Ram. I have no independence." And then there's mantra and yaga. Yaga is worshipping the deities. In many sampradayas, they just give the disciple a deity to worship, and then the mantra are the mantras required to worship the deity. Because they probably didn't do that in India, in the West, because we didn't, you know, we didn't know what to do. In fact, he didn't start. Deity worship came much later, what to speak of. People. He discouraged people having individual deities because we didn't know what to do. He was even afraid when he established a temple in Australia, if when he came back, the deity worship would still be going on. So what to speak of just giving somebody, all initiated devotees, deities, we didn't know what to do. Because in India, people, they grow up, every house, when they build it, they built a puja room in the house. In fact, one time I was looking for a flat, and it's kind of suspicious because I saw this like Arabic script on the door, you know. So I asked, "Where's the puja room?" She said, "There's no puja room." She was Muslim, so there was. So, but every house generally has a puja room. So that would be everybody was trained that way. So, Bhakti Siddhanta, he divided the pancha samskara into two portions, because he had to travel so many different places. He wouldn't always be knowing people. So he gave the first three samskaras, Dasya Nam, Urdhva Pundra, and Tapan. That was called the first initiation. And then after, if he saw people were still around, then later he gave the other two initiations of Mantra and Yaga. Now, then for males, he then gave Vaidik Diksha. He gave Brahma Gayatri and Pavitra. Why he did that? Well, first of all, one thing to consider is that in Vaidik Diksha of Upanayana and this, to be initiated as a Dvija, that has to be done at a very young age. Somebody, a male who is in Sattva Guna, and was going to get initiated, that's done generally between the ages of 6 and 8. Kshatriya, between like 8 and 10. And a Vaishya, between like 10 to 12. Because all three got Upanayanam. They were, they got Gayatri and they got Brahman thread, and they were living in the Gurukula. But there's a time limit. If it's not done by a certain time, then you just become an outcast. it has to be done like a a brahmana, a boy has to be done by about age 16, and then there's like that a little bit later for kshatriya. That's the time limit. So most people, unless they got initiated very young by Bhaktisiddhanta, there was no question that they would all be past the time limit. So since they'd have gotten pancha samskara, they've been born again. Right? So now they got their birth again. Then he could give them upanayanam to the males. To the men. Because there was a whole, there's even a book, the book is up in the bookstore, the Brahmana Vaishnava debate. Because one of the main themes that Bhaktisiddhanta was against, that he preached against, was, of course, impersonalism and the caste system by jati, by birth, caste by birth. He was preached very strongly against that. So he wanted to show that the devotees were beyond that, were above that. So that's done by Pancharatra. This Pancha Samskara is part of the Pancharatric system. And there's a whole, there are many books, Narada Pancharatra, there's the whole section. Some of them are very not straightforward in the sense that you just can't just open the book up and read it. I was in Sri Rangam and I was talking to the second senior archika, Gopal Bhatta, who comes from the family of Tirumala Bhatta, who was the brother of Venkata Bhatta. The father of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. I was staying in that house where Gopal Bhatta Goswami was born. They still have the same deity that he worshipped. And that's where Lord Chaitanya stayed. So he said that the Pancharatra text, which they use in Sri Rangam, you could be the world's top expert Sanskritist and you would not understand what it said. It's all done in codes. You have to be told by your guru what it means. That this such and such code means this is the way you wake the deity up. This phrase means this is how you put them to sleep. This phrase is indicating how you feed the Lord. But unless you knew it, you could be the world's greatest Sanskritist, you wouldn't understand what was being told. It's all done in codes. For example, there's also a system in astronomy where it's called the Katapayadi system, where each letter means a number. And so it may be a shloka, then you're supposed to translate each letter into a number and then reverse the number and divide by a certain thing. That's what the real meaning is. So just knowing the language won't get you anywhere. You have to be initiated into it. So that's a part of the Pancharatric system, which we were initiated into. But we have to... Initiated just means just beginning the system. We have to start it, we have to learn more. But what we've been given by Srila Prabhupada in regards to deity worship is more than sufficient for our purposes. Because in big temples like Sri Rangam, it's very, very complicated. Extremely complicated. The women wouldn't want to do it. They would not want to do it. You have to know. You have to memorize the Yajurveda for 6 years. All the brahmacharis, all the pujaris, they have to go to the Veda Patshala. So some of them, they have to. The Rig Veda takes about 3.5 to 4 years, and the Yajurveda like about 5 to 6 years. Sama Veda takes about 8 years to memorize. That's before you can go on the altar and worship. And only some of them actually are allowed to actually. It's a very complicated system. Some would be difficult to do. Any other questions? Yes?
Thank you, Baba. It was a very interesting class. you mentioned about upanyaya for children or I was wondering, this is from my remembering from India, from the Sri Sampradaya.
Which part of India are you from?
South India.
Which part?
Tamil Nadu.
Which part?
Madras.
Okay.
Gayatri is not given to ladies or us.
In Manu, he gives all the samskaras, and he says that all the samskaras are done for ladies except without mantra. When it comes to Upanayana, he says Upanayana is given for boys, but not for women. For women, they have a special samskara. That is called vivaha. Marriage for them is their initiation into Vedic culture. Vedic civilization is created by Krishna. It is a God-centered civilization. The whole purpose of it is to get out of the material world. How to live in this world with the purpose of leaving it, right? Not with the purpose of staying in. So, all these samskaras are there to purify our consciousness. So Manu explains that this is one of the reasons that there were women, girls, the marriages took place at such an early age. If the boy has to get initiated at such a young age, then the girl should wait till she's 25 and had a PhD? No, she also gets initiated at a young age as well. And she's trained. But they don't live together until after puberty. So Manu describes that while for the boy he gets Upanayana, the girl does Vivaha. And at the time of the marriage, the boy then puts on a second thread. Brahmacharis only wear one thread. At the time of marriage, they put on a second thread for their wife. So that means they have one for themselves. When you buy a lot of brahmacharis are wearing two, because that's how it comes when you buy it in a bundle. There'll be two, because mostly it's grihasthas. But many in South India, they make their own Brahmin threads. They make their own pavitras. So they just make it for themselves. They're brahmacharis, and they just wear it like that. And then, at the time of marriage, they put on a second thread. So then it also describes, Manu describes that, for example, the brahmachari, he does certain types of agnihotras, not elaborate ones, because he only does them for himself. So he says that the girl in her house, her cooking, because the grihastha ashram is whose ashram? We say the grihastha ashram. So whose ashram is that? It's the husband's ashram. Not the wife. She is the first student in his ashram. He went from the brahmachari ashram living with his guru. Then he goes, becomes the grihastha ashram. And his first student is his wife. For a girl, she's always in the grihastha ashram. Either in the ashram of her father, the ashram of her husband, or the ashram of her son. So she's always in the grihastha ashram. Prabhupada, he started the brahmachari in the ashram in the West because he's in ground zero. There's nothing here. He had to start somewhere. You don't find brahmachari ashrams in India. Remember one time in 82, some girl wanted to move into the Bangalore temple. I said, no. You should stay at home. Because there was an argument at the family. Her brother was a devotee. Her parents were not. And I said, no, as a family problem, you sort it out. That would have been a disaster if she would have moved into the temple for us. Because they have temples at home. Everybody's got a temple at home. So let them sort it. And then everything was sorted out later. They all became devotees. The whole family became devotees and everybody was happy. So the girl, her initiation is marriage. And as Manu says, every service that she does in the house of her husband is equivalent to the brahmachari doing service in the ashram of the guru. So he specifically says, her cooking is the same as Agnihotra. And so then when Srila Prabhupada came to the West, Pradyumna told me this. He was at the first, second initiation. Prabhupada didn't want to give to the girls. So then they became upset because it was a time of the height of feminism, second wave feminism. They became very upset. They boycotted the temple for several days. So it was a very Prabhupada, what to do? It's a fledgling movement. The movement is just starting. We should have like a fiasco at the very beginning. So Prabhupada had to think of what to do. So then he invited them and he gave them Savitri Gayatri, but didn't give them a thread. Right? Didn't give them a thread because it is the The thread is the linga of the dvija. That is the symbol of the dvija, is the thread. We refuse to give them a thread. Sort of like, and we, Pradyumna was, we were discussing that Prabhupada did this so that later, it's at the base of 1966, whether we didn't know anything, or 68 or whatever it was, that later as devotees knew more, then they could knew more about the culture, then they would understand his what he did. Because like Ambarish Maharaj, when he took some water, it was simultaneously breaking the fast and not breaking the fast. So Prabhupada giving and not giving at the same time. Enough to satisfy them, but not enough to break any, to go against the Vedic culture, but not giving them. So later on, they would understand what the actual situation is. And in fact, I know some gurus, godbrothers, who are not giving their female disciples Savitri Gayatri because they know what the real standard is, what Prabhupada had to deal with at that time. People who wanted to have a rebellion at the very beginning, it would be not a very positive thing. I think it's time for any other question. Did I answer your question?
Yes, thank you very much.
I think there's anyway, anything else? One more question. You, when it's time to stop, you'll give me the tea, right? Okay. So one more question then. What is it?
It's a very interesting point. I wonder what other things in ISKCON should be there which would be different from what Prabhupada instructed initially. Could you?
Well, then you should read the book on Bhakti Siddhanta. Prabhupada, we were like on the front, the first wave on D-Day. They were almost, you know, like which beach was that? Omaha Beach, 95% casualty rates on Omaha Beach. So we're like the first wave, the cannon fodder, you know, the survivors got a little foothold in, you know. So when Columbus first came to America in 1492, it was just a jungle. About 500 years later, U.S. is the biggest superpower. Of course, some people are debating that now, but a lot of changes. It's a pioneering movement. So in the beginning, you can't exactly see how things work, but then after time, who would have thought, you know, that some carpenter in Palestine would become a world famous figure inside of the big religion? At the time, they were just killing them off. But then after, you know, some centuries, it became the religion of the Roman Empire. You can't always see how things are at the beginning, but then it just gradually manifests. And as people, when people begin to study more, that's why Prabhupada wanted his disciples. I would never intended to stay in India. I just wanted to get initiated. I was going to be there for 6 weeks. But just before I left India, Sridhar Swami stopped me and said, no, you're a British Commonwealth, I'm a Canadian. You should stay in India. Prabhupada wanted all his disciples to stay at least 1 year in India so they can absorb the Vedic culture. Even though it's dead in one sense, but it's still there. You know, because there are people practicing Vedic culture in India. As one godbrother said, I've seen everything that Srila Prabhupada has said in his books at some place, at some time in India. Only thing he hasn't seen is women being carried in palanquins. Like Prabhupada's mother used to be carried in a palanquin. That's the only thing he hasn't seen. But everything else, he's seen. And I've also seen that everything that Prabhupada has mentioned about Vedic culture, you can still find in India. Maybe not all in one place, but it's there. So I was encouraged to stay in India because we could then absorb Vedic culture by osmosis, by seeing it. You know, an elephant is worth 1 lakh rupees, dead or alive, because it's got ivory, it's there, you know. So devotees are beginning to understand. They're studying. In the beginning, we didn't know anything. We didn't even know how to clean ourselves after going to the toilet. But in India, they're right at the very beginning, they're taught, you know, which hand to use, which hand not to use, how to clean themselves. So devotees are now, they're learning, they're spending a lot more time. Like when I first started studying astrology, I don't know how many times people would come and say to me, Prabhupada said Bhakti Siddhanta was the last astrologer, and they practically spit in my face, almost. They don't do that anymore. Because I studied it for 30 years, I know a little bit. Maybe not the level of Bhaktisiddhanta, but you know, because we went to the trouble of learning it. So many devotees are actually learning the culture. They're making that effort. They're making that effort to understand, learn the culture. Like one GBC, Bhakti Bigyan Swami. I met him a couple of months ago in Bangalore. He says he was coming to learn the culture. Just to learn the culture. He was in Udupi. He wants to learn the culture. It's not just theoretical. It's like we go to chemistry class. You know, first you have the theory, then you have lab, right? Put into practice how to do it. Whenever I go to Srirangam, so I have my friends there, Muridhar Bhattar, I tell them at a time, if you see me do anything wrong, tell me, correct me. According, you know, so one time I was in, it was Amavasya day, so they had a big, they were doing the Abhishek for Ranganayaki. So right off of her plate, he gave me this huge, it looked like a big samosa. And you know, the ghee was dripping, running off my arm and dripping off my elbow. You know, so I just started eating it. And he said, no, that's not what you do. Just don't put it in your mouth and start eating. You put it in your left hand, you break off pieces, you throw them in your mouth. That way you can always offer it to somebody else. You don't contaminate the whole thing. Just little things like that. Just learn cultural things by seeing it in practice. Otherwise, now nobody else can touch it. Because it's been in your mouth. Hari Sori told me one time, he was with Srila Prabhupada. So there was a clean plate, and there was a dirty plate. So Hari Sori was Prabhupada's servant. So he picked up both plates, and was going out of the room. Prabhupada says, what did you do that for? Now you contaminated both of them. Even though his hands were clean, but he was touching both a clean thing and a dirty thing at the same time. So now they're both dirty. Prabhupada said, you're just malicious. Malecha, what can I do? Malechas for disciples. But, you know, you learn. You don't do that. You don't touch, because it just goes through your body, you know, like an electrical current. You're contaminated in both. So it comes by training. So that's why he wanted us to, you know, to learn. Of course, you have to be, not that everything in India you should imitate. There's a lot of bad things you shouldn't imitate. You have to. That's why there's the books are there also. You know what is good and what is not to be imitated. Like some of my devotees who began studying astrology, they just imitated everything. They just became Hindus. There's so many nonsense things which are also there. Ganesh worship, this, that, because you know there is a core of Veda culture, but there's also so many accretions which are around. So you have to know how to separate. It has to be according to Shmiti. No. Shruti Shmiti Puranadi Pancharatri Vinim Vina Kantiki Harer Bhakti Utpatyaiva Kalpate. So whatever is that has to be, you have to differentiate what is authentic and what's not authentic. For example, I asked, I was in Srirangam, I had some yajnas done in Lord Chaitanya's room. So I asked them, why are we wearing these kusha grass pavitras? Why we were taking, you know, at the end of a yajna, they take the mango leaves, they put them in the kumbha, right? And they sprinkle with everybody. And they also just give you a whole bath with that water. Why is that? So he said, because, and he just immediately quoted from Yajurveda that the kusha and mango leaves, they act as a conduit for the mantras, and then it's like an electrical conduit, and it puts the mantras right into the water. That's why you put the mango leaves. The leaves are touching the water. They absorb the mantras and it goes into the water. And immediately, because they had memorized the Yajurveda, he quoted, give me Shastra Pramana. So you have to be able to know. It's not just doing it. You have to know why you're doing what you're doing. And that's by knowing the Shastra. But to see it in practice, you have to go to a place. For example, I'll give you another example, which caused a huge controversy. One devotee was quoting how Srila Prabhupada said that at the time of sex, if the male flu, if the male secretion is greater, then there's a male child will be born, otherwise a female child will be born. So this person didn't know. He thought, well, that there should the female should not become stimulated, therefore there'll be no female secretion, and therefore all be male children. So I asked the Ayurvedic doctor what this meant. He said, that's complete nonsense. But what actually it means is the whole body is pervaded with Shukra Dhatu. And for women, they're the equivalent. The whole body, every part of the body, all the dhatus, the seven dhatus are there. Like when you eat food, all the dhatus are in that food, and it gets distributed through the whole body. So if in the male body, through his whole body, his Shukra Dhatu is more prominent than in a female's whole body, her dhatu, then there'll be more males. That's what happens when you don't have somebody proper to teach you. You get all, you know, he got in a lot of trouble for saying that. A whole scandal. Like that. So, speaking of prasadam, it is now time for prasadam. Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Granth Raj Ki Jai. Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai.